You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mares.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. That's my Adam Mares impression. Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On podcast network. I am not your host, Adam Mares. And Brendan Vogt.
I think you got to go a little higher pitch. To
he does have a surprisingly
proper Mares impression
for such a big dude. I'm Brendan Vogt. I'm filling in for Adam Mares. The big homie's away, celebrating with some friends. So much deserved break for him. But I'm hanging out with Harrison Wind of BSN. And Harrison, thanks for coming on because I was too nervous to do a Locked On episode by myself.
Well, I could have given you some pointers because I do a lot of BSN Nuggets podcast by myself. If you guys aren't subscribed, I'm going to plug it right away at the top.
There you go. Nice.
BSN Nuggets podcast, 5 days a week, recorded after games as well. But I'm excited to be on with you so I can get you to lob some questions my way instead of me lobbing the questions for
you. Yeah, exactly, right? It's always more fun when you're not hosting. And it's easy. I can just fall back on you. So pretty sure this is the first time we've done anything like one-on-one.
I think it is.
That's fine. We can weed through the awkwardness together live on the podcast. Harrison, you and I are probably higher on the Nuggets, I think, than anyone in that sort of circle of the blogosphere, journalism sort of environment. So with that said, man, 7-0, big win in Orlando. We went through this when they were 9-1.
Right.
We were as high as we could be. Of course, then the 1-6 slide. So how do you feel about this team right now, man?
Well, I'm really high on them still, like I was at the beginning of the season. Like they went, what'd they start off? 9-1, right?
9-1, yep.
And when I was looking at the schedule before the year began, I thought they'd get off to a hot start, right? They had 10 of their first 15 at home. I thought they'd go 10-5 out of the gate. They ended up going 9-1 and then kind of limped into 10-5. So I wasn't too surprised with the hot start. And then they dropped the 6-7, but I was saying throughout that rough stretch, I didn't think they were playing terrible basketball by any means. They were losing to a lot of good teams. They lost to Memphis in Memphis, who's a good team. Milwaukee twice.
And
New Orleans.
Houston just has their number, right?
Right.
I mean, that makes sense. So.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, man, it was also like they've done such a good job of defending the three. But to be honest, they've gotten a little bit lucky, right? If you just look at the way teams are shooting from the corners, teams are shooting one wide open against the Nuggets. They haven't knocked down all their shots. They did in that stretch. So to your point, it didn't necessarily feel like some massive process error so much as they just sort of like the ball bounced the other way for a little bit.
Right. The only loss you can really look at that stretch as a bad loss is probably the Brooklyn one.
Yeah.
Brooklyn's a team that you still got to get up for, though,
I agree.
Right?
They'll beat a good team.
They're probably not going to make the playoffs in the East. They're still a young team that's well-coached, that's going to get up and down the floor. And, hey, if you go cold for a stretch or two in the middle of that game, they're going to make things close at the end. So it's really the only loss you could look back at that stretch and say it was a bad loss. But it really wasn't the worst loss in the world. They've beaten some good teams. So everybody was freaking out during that stretch about them losing 6-7. I was trying to stay as level as I could because they were losing to some good teams. And then, honestly, I do feel like this team we've seen here on this winning streak is pretty close to what the Nuggets actually are.
I agree. You know what's funny, man, is they're playing so well. They're getting all these like sort of improbable wins. And I would argue, man, that things are not going their way. And I know that sounds a little strange, but you think about sort of the way Gary Harris has shot, the health injuries, you know, the health issues he's dealt with, the way Jamal Murray shot when he's wide open, four dudes in street clothes, Barton goes down in game two. There's actually a lot of reasons to suggest that they've been an unlucky team. So right. I don't really know, like, I'm with you, man. I think that not only are the Nuggets, you know, I don't know if they're like Portland on the road, Toronto on the road consistently good, but they're this good. I don't even think they've hit their peak is really what I'm getting at.
They haven't, and that's the scary thing probably for the rest of the Western Conference in a conference that's as wide open this year as I can remember it over the last 3-4 years. I think we all are still in on Golden State probably winning the conference.
No doubt.
With the one seed. After that, though, you could make a case for a number of teams to be that two seed. Can make a good case for Denver. I mean, I think Denver is the second best team in the West right now, pretty easily. They're probably even playing better basketball right now than Golden State is. And I agree with what you said. I don't think they're at their peak yet because we know they're not all the way there offensively. We know that Gary Harris and Jamal Murray aren't knocking down shots. We know that Nikola Jokic isn't knocking down shots like he's probably going to a month from now, 2 months from now. So I'm with you. I think they're in a really good spot. They're on the verge of kind of really capturing their potential or whatever ceiling they could reach, I think.
I agree, man. I think they're a top five team in basketball right now. I don't really think that's too much of a stretch. And, you know, you look at the way things are out West right now, they haven't proven anything. They're not guaranteed anything, right? They could still slide all the way out of the playoff picture. But wouldn't you agree that this is clearly, clearly a different team from last year?
Definitely. Definitely. And, I mean, you see that show up in so many different facets, right? You see it show up on the road.
Yep.
You see it show up against the Atlanta Hawks teams of the world and the Phoenix Suns teams of the world, the Kings earlier this year. The teams Nuggets should beat.
They're beating them and pretty handedly at times.
Right. They're not messing around with them like they were last year. Also in first quarters too. Like how many times Nuggets come out, particularly on the road last year, and get off to some terrible start and then have to dig their way out of a hole throughout the next right. three quarters? We're not seeing that as much this year. So that leads me to believe this team is more mature. They're a lot more focused this year. And you probably got to give credit to the players and Michael Malone, too, for that.
Definitely Michael Malone, I think. You know, the players for buying into what he's selling, but that just doesn't happen without a coach who consistently preaches some things that, frankly, man, a lot of us were laughing at. Like this idea, we looked at this team as a team that should embrace its offensive identity, as a team that had a hard-defined ceiling on their defensive ability. And he just rejected that. And he right. pushed through with this philosophy. And like, it's only a fifth of the way through this season, but I feel like his vindication in that regard to me has been the story.
I remember I asked Michael Malone a question. I think it was in January or early February, right when they were really getting things in gear and they were beating teams like 130 to 120, right? They were playing absolutely no defense, but their offense was running as well as it had all last season. They were just really in a good rhythm and they were crushing teams on the offensive end of the floor. And of course, Mike Malone is this defensive guy who he constructed these defenses in Cleveland and New Orleans and Golden State. He's a defensive guy to his core and he believes defense is really the key to winning a championship and building a contender. And I remember I asked him, with how your team is winning games, because they went through a stretch last year where they won like 8 of 10 or 8 of 11 all on offense.
Yep.
And I was like, with how you guys are having so much success, you're a defensive guy. Is it tough to just embrace this offensive identity? And he was super honest and he said it was. And he really found himself kind of questioning a lot of his core beliefs.
Right.
And I think what that proved was he's going to play to his team's strengths, but it was pretty clear last year that maybe a team that only shows itself on the offensive end of the floor like they did might have a bit of a ceiling.
Right. You know? Yeah, no doubt.
And maybe we saw that ceiling last year at the end of the season.
Well, it was a team that if the ball wasn't popping and the shots weren't falling, they did not have any way to win games, right? That mm-hmm. that was it. That was the sword they took into battle. Where now it feels like I'd say most of these wins, you go, they're actually surviving some struggles, some level of adversity, and they're doing it through this, like, there's this new baseline that's been set because of the defensive competency. And I assume, I don't want to speak for you, I guess you're just as surprised as anyone else. I mean, I don't think anyone saw this level of defensive.
Well, going back to what you were saying a couple minutes ago, like, we kind of joked about this team becoming better on the defensive end of the floor because, I mean, for three straight years, they had been bottom 10 in defensive efficiency. Last year, they were 30th in opponent field goal percentage, 30th in opponent three-point percentage, and they brought back 78% of their minutes from last year to this year.
Yeah,
you just typically don't see that big of a defensive turnaround year to year, especially if you're bringing back the same coaching staff, same roster, same key players, same rotation pretty much. So that's why it's such a big surprise. Like if they got a bunch of defensive-minded guys in here, maybe we would have thought, you know, there was more opportunity for a turnaround. But, yeah, they took us all by surprise.
Yeah, it's not like they went out and they signed, like, Chris Middleton or, like, right. Paul George or something. And you're going, now, and I had some sort of candid, and you as well, conversations with people in and around the team, like, that suggested no one thought, look, they were going all in on the offense thing. As far as roster construction, like no one was looking at it like, okay, we're just one acquisition away from being a good defensive team. So that credit has to go to Malone. A lot of it's got to go to Paul Millsap though, right? Both on and off the court. Him being healthy, I mean, he's such a good defender, but also I think because it's an extension of those Malone principles, right? He's the only player that echoes. We'll hear Malone talk about defense. The rest, you know, the actual roster, not so much. Millsap is a guy who looked at us with a straight face in training camp and said, our goal is to be a top five defense. And I almost laughed when he said that. But they're fourth in the league right now in defensive efficiency.
Yeah, I was talking with Paul in the locker room after a game before they went on this recent road trip. And I was asking him some questions about, like, when he came to this team 2 years ago, how did he envision this team playing? And he pretty much said exactly how we've been playing this season.
That's crazy.
Like, this is what Paul Millsap signed up for, right? He signed up to play on a playoff contender in the Western Conference that was going to be a defensive first team and was also going to be really good on the offensive end. But, you know, he came here to kind of establish a defensive culture.
Yeah, no doubt. It's almost been like Horford-esque, right? And it's like you don't look at the box score, but his influence defensively on everyone he shares the court with, but also off the court. You know what I mean? Yeah. He really does sort of have that almost like coach's mentality when it comes to preaching it.
Well, that's going back to what I was saying earlier about this team not messing around with the lottery teams they should be beating, not getting off to poor starts in the first quarter. Like if Paul Millsap was around last year and if he wasn't injured as often as he was, if he was active and playing with these guys last year, I think they beat a lot of those teams that they lost to, like the Hawks and the right. Kings and the Suns. I mean, I could go on for minutes about those. And they probably also get off to better starts in first quarters. I think Millsap is huge with that. But you're right. Defensively, he's been enormous. I think he should be a defensive player of the year candidate right now.
I think he has to be, yeah.
He probably should be a leading contender for an all-defensive team, the top all-defensive team right now. He's the catalyst on that end of the floor.
You know, when you talk about bringing a veteran in, like, okay, guys who have seen things, right, experienced things. Okay, well, maybe he hasn't won at the highest level. Maybe he's been on good teams with ceilings. But what he has been is been on great defensive teams. And so that is something that he does thoroughly understand. What does it take? And he had a great quote about how it's like, you know, we always talk about being a multiple effort team defensively, making a concerted effort to be that type of group. And he's like, you know, what's funny is it's really all about building habits, like on a daily level. And the idea is if you preach this stuff enough and if you walk that walk, that eventually that doesn't become a concerted effort. It becomes a habit. And so with that in mind, like, so we've sort of moved the goalposts with the defense throughout the season. Right. Well, they've been great, but they won't be this good, right? Okay, well, they've been elite. Maybe they're just pretty good. We're a fifth of the way through the season and they're fourth. Are they building those habits? Do you believe in this sort of being a sustainable thing across 82 games?
I think it's sustainable. The fact that they've done it for, what, 24 games now?
Yeah.
Like, that's enough of a sample size to say they can do this for 82 games. It's enough. Are they going to finish the year top five defensively? Possibly. If I had to bet on it, I'd say they don't.
Right.
I'd say they finish somewhere from maybe 5 to 10. But you're right. The expectation now, and I've talked about this on my show, the expectation now is anything outside a top 15 defense is probably a big disappointment for this team.
Isn't
right?
that right? Yeah, absolutely. Now they've set that precedent. Like, we know they're capable of this, and maybe it's not sustainable across 82, but it's not fluky.
Right.
So you're right. I mean, I think at this point, anything less than league average would be a huge disappointment.
But it is crazy, though, how it's totally flipped this year. And how about how you can really see Paul Millsap's defensive intensity, his defensive focus rub off on these other guys?
Yep, 100%.
The level that Nikola Jokic is defending at this year, I think, is probably almost a bigger story. Well, it's definitely a bigger story. It's definitely probably more impressive than what he's done on the offensive end of the floor.
Right? I agree because of what we come to expect, right? And Chris Herring with that great piece today for 538 about just what we were just talking about, Denver's defensive turnaround despite the personnel remaining the same. That doesn't happen without Jokic. And dude, he's not only been he's not only avoided being a liability, he's actually been almost good. He's been competent. League average,
I wrote this the other day. It's not even that he's improved as a defender. It's not even that he's a league average defender. He's been a good defender this
year. A good
year.
Defender.
And it's crazy. The effort is just incredible. I didn't think he had this in him, to be honest. I thought he was a guy who, you know, he just wants to roll the ball out there and get buckets, right?
Right.
And I didn't expect this from him, but I really think this goes maybe even for Jokic and goes for a lot of people on this roster. Losing game 82 last year was a blessing in disguise.
I agree. It's a great take.
It would have been great for them to get in the playoffs. Typically, you gotta just get to the first round, get your ass beat one time in the playoffs, then kind of go back to the drawing board and say, okay, this is what we got to do to, you know, really get far in this thing. But maybe for this team, all they needed was losing that game 82 and having to sit at home and watch teams that they knew they were better than, that they yep. thought they were better than them, play in the playoffs. Maybe that's what they needed.
And if the Nuggets become a great team, I think like most great teams, you'll be able to trace it back and find some of those examples of those mm-hmm. learning moments. Like, that adversity is important. And people grow tired of using youth as an excuse about this team, but it's a reality, right? And so to go through these lessons now, and I feel the same way about that 1-6 stretch, right? While there's still time to grow and improve, I think are important. I think we'll learn it's like more of a natural part of the process should they become a great team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe this is their, maybe that game 82 is like when the Warriors beat the Nuggets that year.
That's what I'm saying.
And then who they lose to, the Clippers that season?
So. Yeah, that sounds right.
Maybe this is Denver's version of that.
Yeah, definitely getting ahead of ourselves, but why not be excited, man? You know what else has been a big difference from last season to this season is the bench play, which in my opinion has transformed from like a liability to an insurance plan. I think last season we talked about like digging themselves out of a hole. I feel like often we saw the starters get off to a great start, particularly on the road. And then that initial series comes for the bench and you're just holding your breath, waiting for the inevitable. This season you're going, man, the starters are struggling. I kind of hope to see the bench get in there because they're kicking ass.
Yeah, last year, this team did not know what they were getting from their second unit on a night-to-night basis. And this year, it's been a total transformation. Like, I've written this, I've tweeted this many times. I think this is the best bench in the league. The Monte Morris, Jamal Murray, Malik Beasley, Trey Lyles, Mason Plumlee lineup. If you just look at every team in the league and their most used bench lineup, and I just kind of drilled down to lineups that have three or more bench players in it, it's by far not only the most used lineup, but one of the most efficient too, just in it from a net rating perspective. They kill it when they're out there on offense and defense
yep,
too. Maybe that's the most surprising thing.
Yep, I agree.
Defensively, they've been just as good as the starters, if not a little better.
I think part of that is that Monte Morris is a far better defender than we all expected. I think, and I don't want to pretend like I combed through his college film, but you just, when he's drafted, you look at his size, you look at his archetype for your guy, you go, okay, probably going to get bullied a little bit on that end. I think he's been a phenomenal perimeter defender, and it's helped set the tone for that second unit.
You know what he's not afraid to do? He's not afraid to stick his body in the middle of the paint
and
take a charge on a Kyle Kuzma on, you know, anybody in the league. He's not afraid of that. He's willing to put his body on the line. He's taken a couple charges this season where I'm not sure how he's gotten up from them.
Also, maybe don't recommend, like in garbage time against Orlando, like right. You don't need to stick right. your face in that one. Man.
Right. He's 175 pounds, maybe.
Yeah, soaking wet.
Maybe. And that makes him one of the 10 lightest players in the league, I believe. So you just didn't have high expectations for him as a defender. It's because of his body type. Like, how many guys his size have ever been plus defenders?
He's incredible, dude. You have to remind yourself all the time that he's essentially a rookie because, to me, like right after Millsap, he carries himself as like one of the foremost veterans on this team.
He does, and he's had a lot of profound moments like that. I forget what game it was off the top of my head. Maybe it was the loss against Brooklyn, but nobody had answers after that game in the Nuggets locker room.
Yep.
Nobody knew what was going on. Everybody said, yeah, we just got to watch film and figure it out. Monte was the only guy who stood up and said, yeah, maybe we just got to hold each other accountable and have those tough conversations that not a lot of people on this team want to have. Felt like that was a very profound moment from him because he is such a young guy. It's his second year in the league, technically, although it's pretty much his rookie year. He played 25 minutes last year. But he's wise beyond his years, and like you look at him as this rookie, but he's 2 years older than Jamal Murray.
Yeah, that's true.
So he's got a lot of reps under his belt.
I did ask him if he thinks the four-year college thing, which is getting rarer and rarer, helps in that regard, and there was no hesitation there. He's like, it prepares you, not just on the court, but off the court. Like,
sure.
You just have this time to mature in these roles, but you're right. And he's been one of the best interviews on the team, without a doubt. And that was an important phase for them, right? Because for so long, the question was, okay, well, are these guys going to get on each other? Are they going to hold each other accountable? In that time period, it was like, okay, are they going to receive the feedback in the right way, right? And not take it personally.
It's a huge step for this team. And I don't think we know if they're all the way there on that front there yet. Because when you're winning, you don't have to have those conversations.
That's right.
But when you lose 6-7... And that's when that part of your team and that part of your team chemistry really gets tested. Mm. And are they going to need Isaiah Thomas to stand up in the middle of the locker room after a 4-game winning streak and inspire his guys and say, yeah, we can turn this thing around? Like, or is that going to come from somebody else next time? I don't know. I think that's going to be a big test for this team. When the going gets tough, how are they going to respond again?
But it seems like it'll be a luxury to have a guy like Monte who, you just know, whatever he does, he's going to command respect, right? From his teammates, from folks around the league. So maybe he is the type of guy who sort of fills that role going forward. He's still just a rookie, but you know, who else would it be? It would be maybe Barton, IT, but IT's not really part of this team yet. You know what I mean?
He's not, but he is, I feel like.
Yeah.
No, he's the leader of this team, kind of. Even though he's not playing, he's the emotional, vocal leader of this team, which is crazy to say because he hasn't played a minute this year. But behind the scenes, he's huge. I just talked about that him addressing the team after that 4-game losing streak. That was, you know, something talking to players. That was a very profound moment. How he speaks up in film sessions.
Right.
From talking to players and coaches. His voice there is very profound. It makes a huge impact when, you know, he's willing to say whatever. He's willing to call guys out because he's been to the Eastern Conference Finals.
That's right.
He demands that type of respect. So it's an ongoing thing with this team. Like, I think they got a lot of leaders behind the scenes. I think Paul Millsap's a guy who leads by example. Jamal Murray, I think he could develop into that vocal guy. You know, like, he's just 21 right now. He's still so young. But yeah, IT has had probably a more profound impact than a lot of people realize, I'd say.
And I do want to talk about maybe, like, I'm still not sure if it's a good problem to have or not to have some of these sort of bench pieces waiting to get healthy again. And we'll get to that, specifically IT. But before we do, a lot of time talking about Monte, he's been a large part of the turnaround for the bench, but he hasn't been the full story. To me, and I think we've both written on this recently, Mason Plumlee has been as good as he's ever been, and you can't look at his box score or anything like that, but this is a starting caliber center who is treating his role on the second unit responsibly. He's really taken to it, and he's been a leader on and off the court for them. One of the best defenders on the team. Like, I think he might be the MVP of this bench. I mean, he's been so good, man.
I'd probably say the MVP is Monte Morris, but I'd have Mason Plumlee as a 1B to Monte's 1A, I'd say. I think Monte's been a tad more valuable, but Mason's been incredibly valuable, man. As a defender, he's got one of the best defensive ratings in the league for centers right now. You know what you're getting with him. I think what is really helping Mason out this year is he's not playing a ton of minutes, right?
Right.
He's playing 17 minutes per game, but when he is out there, he's giving the Nuggets 17 A-plus minutes.
For sure.
He's not going through ups and downs. He's not really going through cold stretches and like slumps on the offensive and defensive ends of the floor. He's really giving the Nuggets A-plus minutes for the entire time he's out there tonight. And I think that's a reason why he's playing so well.
And he's also like, he's just been willing to sort of assume this role of like leadership and being the aggressor when guys let things get stagnant and guys are just standing around and watching. And look, you never really want a possession to end in a Mason Plumlee jump hook, but he'll like when the ball stops moving and guys are standing around and the shot clock's winding down, like he'll recognize that and he'll just go to the hole and draw a foul or put it up. And there's just all these like little ways in which he's just sort of filled in the cracks when the team needs something and he goes, I will provide that as best I can for a short spurt. And I think like if you're a coach like Michael Malone, this guy has to be one of your favorite players, like of all time.
Oh yeah. Michael Malone loves him some Mason Plumlee.
Absolutely.
I think what we forget about Mason sometimes, you mentioned it though, he's been a starter on playoff teams before.
That's right.
In Brooklyn he was, in Portland he was. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if you know this, but was when he got traded to Denver midseason from Portland, I believe that might have been the first time he's missed the playoffs going back to like middle school, you know?
Really? Yeah, I would have to double check.
You know, I remember something like that, but he's a winner, man.
No doubt.
He won in high school. He won at Duke. He got drafted to a Brooklyn team with Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce and Ray Allen. He's been on some good teams around some good veteran guys, and I've talked to him about this year. He would rather be a starter. He wants to return to a starting lineup one day. He still thinks he's that good. I think he's good enough to be a starter in this league for sure.
Absolutely, no doubt, yeah.
But he's buying into his role this year because he's placing team success over personal goals. Like, he could go in there whenever he gets in there for those 17 minutes and just put up shots, right?
Yeah, that's true. He could just be walking in that now's my moment. No, yeah. You're right. And I think that's why it's actually getting interesting and kind of fun to reexamine this trade in hindsight, right? Not just the trade, but the extension. Both moves heavily criticized and probably deservingly so at the time. But now you go, okay, Nurkic wanted out. Like, not just wanted out. Like, that was a toxic situation. Needed to be gone. And sure, you have to attach a pick, but where else do you go and how else do you get a starting caliber center who's willing to take a backup role? And in hindsight, like, man, of course that's worth a pick. That's a hard role to fill.
Yeah. The trade market for Nurkic wasn't exactly fruitful.
No.
Or the interest there. And if you look at the contract the Nuggets handed out, they paid Mason Plumlee to be the best backup center in the league, right? Yep. And this year he has an argument for the best backup center in the league. He's played great. I don't know if he's lived up to his contract because
it's a tough ask.
Like, he's getting paid as a starter and he's a guy who plays 17 minutes per game
and no one else was trying to pay him. That's really the big thing.
But if this ends with the Nuggets as, you know, a 4 or 5 seed or even a 6 seed and they make the playoffs and this second unit plays as well as they have for the entire season, hey, it's money well spent.
It is, right? Which is a crazy thing to think. It's funny, man, with Tim, you know, there's been some luck involved, but like, he's gotten some moves right, and the biggest blemishes on his record, they sort of look a little better in hindsight. Like, I really look back at his body of work and go, man, like, Connolly's just done a really awesome job. And that was sort of hot takey not that long ago.
It was, and I never really understood that.
Yeah.
Because he's rebuilt this team really the only way you can, I feel like, in a market like Denver. You have to build through the draft initially, and then once you get some cred around the league, once your clout around the league goes up, then you can start making some moves in free agency, right? And that's what we've seen. He built this team through the draft. He missed on some guys. Every GM misses on their fair share of guys.
No doubt.
Emmanuel Mudiay, that was a big miss for sure.
The Tyler Lydon fiasco when it could have been Mitchell. That's a reasonable criticism. Yeah,
that was a rough night as well. Every GM, every front office has those.
12 other teams did that night. I mean, Mitchell could have gone one.
Right. I just think if you look at the body of work, the Nuggets have built this team in the way they kind of had to for a market like Denver. From where they were when this regime took over to now, I'm not sure there was really another way they could have done it. They couldn't have gone out 3 years ago and gotten a Paul Millsap in free agency.
No way.
He wouldn't have given them a meeting, right? So they had to build this thing up through the draft. They did that. They got the foundational pieces in here. And then you put your team over the top through free agency, which they did to an extent with Millsap, and we're seeing the results of that this year. Maybe we see that again next summer.
Yeah, maybe, right? It's getting to that point. And it's interesting, getting ahead of ourselves again, but like the parallels with the way this city has grown. Like, there will come a time where being a rich person in Denver and taking a meeting with the Denver Nuggets is no longer this like out of left field thing, right? I mean, it has to be something on NBA players' radars eventually.
Yeah, Denver is a thriving city, man. People don't realize how awesome Denver is until they spend a lot of time here. I mean, we talk to writers who come in here for a night or two nights, and they always say, man, I wish I had a couple more days here because the city is so awesome. 300 days of sunshine a year. They painted that on the freaking court to let everybody know last year. I was a little upset that it's gone this year. But, no, Denver's on the up and up, and I think you're going to see them take advantage of that in free agency next year. I don't know who they're going to get, but I don't think they're going to be quiet.
I agree. Couldn't agree more. All right, a couple more things before we finish up here, man. Will Barton, we just got the update, heavy air quotes on that. He's week to week as he recovers from that hip core muscle surgery. Really excited to get him back. Is there any concern at all about sort of what happens to, we love the way the starters are playing, we love the way the bench is playing. Will Barton and Isaiah Thomas will come back, and when they do, they will play. Any level of concern about sort of figuring that out for you?
Isaiah Thomas is a whole nother animal, right?
Agreed.
It's a whole different part of this argument. With Barton, no, there's no concern. We only saw that starting lineup for, what, 1.5 games this year? Almost 2 games.
But they looked good.
It was about as good as we thought it was going to be. We all had high expectations for the starters and Barton coming into the year. And yeah, the starters have played really well since he went down with Wancho in there, but I don't have any concern about putting Barton back into the starting lineup and moving Wancho back to the bench. When it comes to Isaiah, it's a whole other deal because you can't sit Monte Morris down right now. You've got to keep giving him, I personally think, at least 20 minutes a night. That should be the minimum that Monte Morris plays.
I mean, he's been like the 4th or 5th best player on the team, I think.
I was going through this the other night. If you're ranking MVPs on this team right now, I would probably go Jokic and Millsap, 1-2. And then 3 is probably Gary Harris, but this was before he had these recent injuries crop up. For me, 4 is definitely Monte Morris, and
yeah,
he's probably threatening that 3rd spot with these injuries to Gary, and I'm not sure how long he's going to be out, but he maybe could overtake him. He's been so crucial.
He's been so good, and as you talked about before, it's not just how good he's been. It's like that is in relief of what was once Emmanuel Mudiay. So this is right, just like night and day. But yeah, I mean, Monte's good with the bench. He's good with the starters. He's good off the court. I think you're right. I know what IT has done. I know what he's proven. I know what he's capable of. But there's almost no way in which I can envision him having such a positive impact on this team that, like, all right, you just got to you gotta sit Monte.
Yeah, you can't. You can't sit him. And I think he's got to play around 20 minutes at the minimum, Monte Morris, for the rest of this season, or, you know, unless this team goes into
a How does that? Can you play them together?
I think they're going to have to try to. It's really one of the only ways they're going to be able to play all these guys, right? I mean, you got to imagine if Isaiah Thomas is getting consistent minutes, Malik Beasley, who's been logging a lot of minutes as of late, he's playing like 30 minutes a night over this recent stretch. You know, he's going down into the low 20s, maybe the high teens even. Wancho, probably same with him. And that's obviously when you get Will Barton up about, you know, to the 30 or 33 mark that he had penciled in for himself this year. You're probably going to have to try to play Isaiah Thomas and Monte Morris in the backcourt together. I don't know how it's going to look. It's probably not going to be great defensively. The bench unit's defense is probably going to drop off. But that's the scenario I see unfolding, at least. When that happens, I don't know when that's going to happen. It could be later this month.
Doesn't
it could
it
be
seem
in January.
Like,
I don't know.
I know they said December, but man, IT, and this is just me speculating recklessly, but he doesn't look anywhere near ready.
The Nuggets never said December.
Yeah, that's all Woj, right? And, well, and IT together.
I think that's what Isaiah Thomas had in mind.
Yep.
A personal goal of his to get back sometime this month here. But I don't know. I'm not sure.
He's limping. Haven't seen him running with the guys. It just seems hard to imagine that he's back anytime soon. But I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what he's going through, and I wouldn't count that dude out for anything. All right, this has been mostly just like a love fit, like just us really high and excited about our team. So before we go, what are you most concerned about, and why, with the Denver Nuggets right now?
What am I most concerned about? I kind of mentioned this earlier, but what happens if they lose 5 of 6?
Mm-hmm.
What happens if they lose 4 of 5? That's probably going to happen once or twice throughout the rest of the year. This team has a tough schedule over the second half of the season in particular. Their beginning of the year was a very home-heavy, favorable schedule. It's going to get tougher. And look, they're in a tough stretch right now, and they're flying through it like it's nothing.
Yeah.
So maybe it won't, but I have a feeling there's going to be some adversity to hit this team at some point. And how do they respond to that? Because, like I said earlier, losing 6 of 7, it was against good teams, so I don't think it was as bad as a lot of people made it out to be, but it's probably going to happen again.
And what was bad about it was just the way things fell off the court, which I think is the point you're making.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's probably what I'm worried. How are they going to respond to a similar stretch like that? Because it's probably going to happen again at one point or another.
I agree. And for me, it's probably the fourth quarter execution. I know they've survived some of those fourth quarters of late, but it still, to me, has looked far from like a well-oiled machine. And I think there's still sort of the beauty in having Jokic as your best player is that you don't need him to go Jimmy Butler to win a game, but there are times in which you need someone to do that, someone to step up. And in the final minutes of a game, it seems like a lot of guys waiting around and standing for, you know, standing and waiting for someone else to make a play.
I'm curious how the late game execution will look when Will Barton back in this.
Yeah, me too.
Because what you see a lot is you see one guy in Jamal Murray who wants the ball every possession, who's not afraid to turn it over, who's not afraid to miss a shot. I think that's great for a 21-year-old franchise cornerstone to operate that way. I'd rather him operate that way than be afraid to make a mistake late in games.
Well said.
But other than that, it doesn't seem like you have a lot of guys who want to take that last shot right now. We know Will Barton's a guy who is fine taking that shot. Gary Harris is another guy who's fine taking that shot. And so I'm curious to see what happens late in games when everybody's healthy, and I guess when Isaiah Thomas is healthy.
Yeah, because
he's
true.
He's hit a big shot or two in fourth quarters.
Something tells me he's going to want to say in how these games finish up. All right, Harrison, thanks so much for coming on, dude. Again, just terrified to do a Locked On podcast by myself. Way too many listeners on this show. Do you have anything you want to plug, my friend, before you go?
No, not really. Just my podcast, the BSN Nuggets podcast. We're also 5 days a week. Recorded Monday through Friday on iTunes, on Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts from. And, of course, bsndenver.com. $4.99 a month for a subscription, as low as $2 a month if you buy a 3-year subscription.
Man, you've got that down.
I've said it once or
twice. It's like you've done it before.
And I've hosted a podcast or two in my day.
For us at Stiffs, I just want to plug a couple of events we're hosting this Saturday. Just an informal hangout. Come down to the Illegal Pete's on Colfax. I'll be there. Some other fans will be there. It's not a watch party. Just hanging out, watching them hopefully beat the Hawks. So come through, have some beer, have a burrito. Should be a good time. And then December 15th, there's a watch party in Australia, in Melbourne. Because believe it or not, the Nuggets fan base is international. Tons of them in the land down under. And they'll be getting together. So spread the word. If you're an Australian listener, make sure you get yourself to Melbourne somehow. No idea how far that might be from you. But yeah, shouts to the fans down under. All right, thanks so much to Adam for letting me guest host this thing. I hope I didn't drive it into the ground. He should be back next week. And yeah, we'll talk to you guys soon.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.